here on VOA Africa.
This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, a technical nightmare hits the New York Stock Exchange. Another promise from Greece to avoid financial collapse. Muslim comedians take on the New York City subways.
You can't dispute comedy. You can't dispute the underlying message, which is Muslims are human beings, some of whom have a sense of humor.
Some country music artists tie the knot. These stories are more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. It was a wild day on Wall Street Wednesday, not because stock prices went up or down, but rather they were halted midday for about 4 hours by what's being called a technical malfunction. However, other U.S. financial exchanges were unaffected. VOA correspondent Jim Randall talked with International Edition's Jim Stevenson about what happened.
Apparently, it was a computer glitch, and apparently they've worked out whatever it was and fixed it. And trading was never stopped entirely because many of these issues are traded on other exchanges. So things kept perking along and to a large degree. But it was kind of a shock, and it was pretty unusual. I mean, glitches happen, but they haven't happened that often in to such a large and important financial institution.
And a bit of a surprise, given the confluence of events around the world. You have China's stock market having some severe problems right now. Greece is having its debt issues. And United Airlines had briefly all of its flights grounded because of technical issues.
Well, United traced it down to a faulty router, which I'm not a computer bunny, but as far as I can tell, it broadcasts the signal to other computers and all of that. Anyway, that went haywire. It's been fixed, replaced, or whatever, and so they're back in business. The official line we get is that these issues and problems with the Wall Street Journal website were not related and were not due to an attack, were not due to, as the White House put it, something nefarious, which I thought was a nice turn of phrase.
Yes. It's certainly a serious situation in China right now with about a 31% decline in the stock market over the past 3 weeks. The Chinese government has tried to impose some measures to curb this slide. How do you see this market at this point?
I think China matters a lot because it's been an engine of growth for the entire planet. I mean, things like Australian iron ore exports are, as China's growth slows down, Australian exports slow down. Exports of everything else to China from everywhere else to this vast market are slowing down. And, of course, that has a ripple effect through other economies. That's one issue. And the other is not so much an economic problem, but the turbulence on the stock market worries investors. The thing they hate more than most anything else is uncertainty. They can bet on stocks going up. They can bet on stocks going down. They've figured that out. What they haven't figured out is how to figure out how to cope with uncertainty. And this dramatic swinging back and forth raises uncertainty.
A real psychological type of situation.
Sure. And there's real economics going on there.
Right.
I mean, that's very complicated. But perhaps it was, clearly a lot of people describe it as a bubble that has burst. And stocks, by that definition, would have been overvalued. And now they're falling down to where they're economic fundamentals, the amount of profit they make and their prospects, are they likely to be, you know, a leader in their field and sell a lot of stuff and so forth. Those fundamentals support a lower price, and so it's headed for that lower price. Now, it's going to be interesting to see if it falls below where the fundamentals should put it.
Well, sure, because then a lot of investors realize, hey, we got some bargains out there and start buying.
Yeah, buying puts upward pressure on prices, and that raises prices, and you get a little more equilibrium.
VOA correspondent Jim Randall speaking with International Edition's Jim Stevenson. At the closing bell, with investors concerned about Greece and China, the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 261 points, or 1.5%, to end the day at 17,515. Time now to check out what's trending on the web. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is in the studio to tell us more about the glitch on the New York Stock Exchange. Hello, G.
Hi, Ray. As our Jim Randall just said in the Q&A, it's been an action-packed day on Wall Street with a lot going on. But it might be more accurate to say, technically, there hasn't been much activity on Wall Street. The New York Stock Exchange, or NYSE, halted trading in all securities for more than 3.5 hours due to computer malfunction. As Jim mentioned, investors went on to trade on other venues like the NASDAQ. Today's halt comes at a very inopportune time because investors are already feeling the jitters from the Chinese stocks meltdown and the Greek debt crisis.
Now that's absolutely true. So what are people saying on social media about the problems that hit the New York Stock Exchange?
A lot of things, actually, from reading into the cause of the computer glitch to its effect on different stocks. Here's one from online publication Daily Beast reporter Tim Mack. He tweeted, FBI Director James Comey says the Wall Street Journal website crashed due to overload from readers seeking information from NYSE technical problems. That's been retweeted more than 120 times. And someone replied to that tweet saying, "This is my favorite example of irony," referring to crashing a website while trying to figure out why another system had to be suspended.
Well, that's interesting. Interesting twist of mind. Gee, you also said people are talking about the impact on share prices.
Absolutely, especially on the type of the stocks. The Bloomberg Business's Twitter account shared an article titled, "Cybersecurity Stocks Surged on the Back of the Big NYSE Trading Halt." That's been retweeted more than 250 times. Bloomberg Business is on Twitter at Business. The article says cybersecurity shares such as Palo Alto Networks and AVG have moved up in today's trade. To put that into perspective, both the Dow and NASDAQ closed lower. And before I go, I just wanted to mention hashtag NYSE was used more than 54,000 times in the last 24 hours. Ray?
Thanks, G. That was our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee. You can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. That's J-E-E-A-B-B-E-Y-L-E-E. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. With fears growing of financial collapse in Greece and a chaotic exit from the Eurozone, Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras expressed confidence Wednesday a deal will be reached that will keep his country in the euro currency union. Prime Minister Tsipras told the European Parliament in Strasbourg that Athens would produce new concrete proposals by today to meet the demands of European lenders who've grown weary of Greece's debt crisis. Lisa Bryant has more.
Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras spoke before a rowdy European Parliament just hours after the end of an inconclusive summit in Brussels, and just hours before a Thursday deadline for Greece to deliver a credible reform plan to fellow Eurozone members.
Είναι πρόταση που περιλαμβάνει αξιόπιστες μεταρρυθμίσεις, Mr. Tsipras received a mix of boos and cheers as he said Greece will continue with reforms and deliver the proposals Greek creditors want in return for securing new bailout funds. But he said Greeks also need a sign there is light at the end of a difficult tunnel, hope of an exit to the crisis. The prime minister spoke amid growing warnings that time is running out for Greece. European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said the Eurozone only has 4 days to come up with a final agreement that will allow Greece to receive more bailout funds. He said preparations are underway in case of a possible Greek exit from the monetary union.
La réponse de la crise grecque n'est pas de ne rien faire.
In his remarks to the European Parliament, Mr. Juncker said the response to the Greek exit is not to do nothing, but to make Europe's economic and monetary union more durable. Leaders from the 28-member European Union are to meet Sunday for a final summit to consider the proposal Athens is expected to deliver, with Eurozone finance ministers discussing the details the day before. There have been many ultimatums, although not quite this serious, so it's unclear whether this one will stick. The chief economist for the London-based Center for European Reform, Christian Odendaal, believes there is still a chance for a deal that will also pass muster in Germany, Greece's biggest creditor. German Chancellor Angela Merkel says Greece cannot just offer a short-term fix.
I think the probability for an agreement is still relatively high because no side really wants Greece to leave the Eurozone, to default and so forth. Angela Merkel is, of course, in a very difficult situation, but she still has enough political capital to get a deal that she deems appropriate and feasible through the German parliament. I have no doubt about that.
It's unclear what will happen if no deal is struck. Greece is rapidly running out of cash, and the limited funds it's receiving now from the European Central Bank may dry up altogether. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Top U.S. and Iranian negotiators met for about 3 hours Wednesday in Vienna, trying to resolve differences in a nuclear agreement. Negotiators have now given themselves until Friday to come up with a comprehensive accord. Secretary of State John Kerry and Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif are staying in Vienna, although it is unknown if they'll meet. Secretary Kerry met Wednesday with members of the U.S. negotiating team. RAND Corporation senior political scientist Rick Brennan told VOA's Victor Beatty, Iran is less interested in reaching an agreement than are the powers it's negotiating with.
I think all of this kind of suggests what many people have suspected for a long time, that the Iranians are using the negotiation process as a means to delay and ultimately try to move the ball down the court far enough that they'll be able to continue with the program that many people suspect they have. We realize they have a very sophisticated ballistic missile program. Their rocket technology is the best in the region, and with their apparent continuation of trying to resist overtures of the international community to inspect sites on military facilities. Again, it suggests that in the long term, what they're trying to do is to surreptitiously develop a nuclear weapon with or without the type of agreement that we've put in place.
There seems to be a difference of opinion on exactly how quickly these talks should be wrapped up. The West seems to want to have it wrapped up certainly by midnight Thursday or Friday at the latest. 48 hours is what one suggested is all that they're going to give it. The Iranians say no deadline is sacrosanct for us. Why the difference?
I think the difference is because the West wants an agreement that has teeth in it that can actually prevent Iran from achieving the weapon. Iran, on the other hand, is using the negotiation process as a way to buy time. This has been a standard method that the Iranians have used in a whole range of activities. They engage in dialogue, and while they're engaged in the dialogue, they continue to pursue the type of actions that the dialogue is designed to prevent. And so by extending the talks just gives the Iranians that much more time to move towards their ultimate goal, which, as I said before, I think is the development of a nuclear weapon.
The Associated Press quotes Russia's foreign minister Sergei Lavrov as saying that fewer than 10 major differences are still to be ironed out, including access to Iranian sites for international monitors. 10 major differences, that seems like an awful lot of territory to cover in 48 hours.
10 major differences is enormous. I mean, we aren't talking about little things, one of which is the access to military sites for observation and monitoring what's taking place. But there are other ones that are related to the sanctions regime. How do you do this snapback, and will the Iranians agree to it? The other one is whether or not the sanctions will be removed immediately. It's something the United States has been saying they were unwilling to do, but the Iranians are saying it's the only way we'll come to an agreement. So these are huge differences that are still on the plate, and it's hard for me to see how in 2 days you can resolve these differences in a manner that satisfies the stated positions of the parties that are at the table today.
Is this a game of chicken?
I think it is a game of chicken, and I think that the Iranians are going to continue to push in this direction and wait and see what the international community does. I think in many respects, the United States and the international community are more interested in getting a deal than the Iranians are interested in making the deal. They're using this desire by the international community to come to an agreement to their advantage in the negotiating process.
Rick Brennan, senior political scientist with the RAND Corporation, speaking with International Edition's Victor Beatty. Pakistan says the first official face-to-face discussions between Afghan government officials and the Taliban have made progress, with the two sides agreeing at a meeting near Islamabad to work on confidence-building measures and hold more talks after the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. VOA Afghan reporter spoke with U.S. Senator John McCain about the talks. Here are brief excerpts from that interview with the Arizona Republican, who is also chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee.
Anytime there is conversations going on and even negotiations, it's a good sign. There are several questions. Does this group was negotiating for the Taliban? Do they represent all of the Taliban or just part of it? What is the goal of the talks as articulated by the two sides? But we hope that these talks will succeed. We think it's very important. And perhaps the Taliban are growing weary. I also think that the Pakistanis can play a significant role, and one significant role they can play is to cut off and stop supporting the Haqqani network, which continues to orchestrate attacks in Afghanistan, unacceptably.
On your recent trip to Afghanistan, you met with President Ghani and has staked his presidency over these talks with Taliban, and controversially has engaged Pakistan also in these talks. Is his gambit paying off?
We hope so. Mm-hmm. We don't know, but the outreach that President Ghani made to Pakistan, I think, was the right move. I hope that it will be reciprocated. As we know, Pakistani domestic politics are very, very complex. But one can hope that the Pakistanis will see it in their interest to urge the Taliban to come to some agreement. Look, I'm not optimistic about the outcome, but I do think that it's important to make these efforts to resolve this conflict. But I'd also point out, if the Taliban believe the United States is going to be almost out, almost completely, by 2017, that removes a great deal of the motivation for them to reach a peaceful agreement, because they're going to think that they can succeed.
U.S. Senator John McCain speaking with VOA Afghan reporters. You're listening to The Voice of America.
From science and technology, here's what's new.
What's new is a prototype of a material that reacts to water. As a graduate student at the Royal College of Art in London, Chow Chen was out and about on a rainy day when he picked up a pine cone and noticed that it reacted to water by closing the tiles of its outer shell. Chow went to the lab and created a laminate that mimics the pine cone. He built a shelter covered with tiles made of this material that opens up on sunny days and closes when it rains. Another use, covering a building with this material, which reacts to rain, exposing a different facade underneath. And how about this? Planting a strip of this material in the pots of your houseplant so that when it senses dry soil, it turns color. Chow says a lot more testing needs to be done, but hopefully soon it shall be known the worldly value of the common pine cone. For VOA's What's New, I'm Todd Grossance.
This is VOA's International Edition. The New York City transit system is one of the largest in the world. It is being challenged in federal court by two young Muslim comedians and film producers who want to advertise their new film on subways. The plaintiffs say their rights are being violated under the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. VOA's Bernard Schussman has details.
The controversy revolves around the promotion of this movie, Beware the Muslims Are Coming, on public transit. At issue is the latest advertising for this film. Its producers, Vaguely Qualified Productions, in the persons of comedians Negin Farsad and Dean Obadallah, are suing the Transit Authority for reneging on a signed contract that would have promoted the film on subways. They have already spent almost $20,000. After agreeing on the ad campaign, the MTA now says it contains disputed political content. Len Caton is legal director for Muslim Advocates.
You can't dispute comedy. You can't dispute the underlying message, which is Muslims are human beings, some of whom have a sense of humor. Like, these are things that I don't think anyone could reasonably dispute. And that's why we think the MTA got the decision so wrong.
The MTA got out of so-called political messaging after being burned in a lawsuit over its efforts to keep these ads sponsored by anti-Islamic campaigner Pamela Geller off of buses. New York transit watchdog Gene Rushinoff calls the MTA decision loopy.
It's really important to have free speech in the New York City subways. I mean, for people who don't live in New York, you know, they're like the streets. They're where you go to communicate, where you listen to music that's being played by performers on the platforms.
Muslims, you know they want to.
Beware the Muslims Are Coming is now playing on major streaming services, and the subway promotion was important to the two comedians. They felt betrayed by the MTA decision on their signed contract.
Muslim chicks are super hot.
Bernard Schussman, VOA News, New York.
And now music of a different sort. If you're a fan of country music, Brantley Gilbert's story reads like the lyrics of a song. A man who reunited with a long-lost love, but she's married to someone else. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with Nikki Strong about Gilbert's story.
Summertime in the Northern Hemisphere is a time when a lot of folks get married. Country musicians are no exception, but the story behind one relationship is almost like a country song in and of itself. Nikki Strong of VOA's Country Hits USA joins us in the studio. Nikki, Brantley Gilbert married his one-time former sweetheart.
Yes.
And this is a story.
It is saucy.
So now they met in church when they were young.
Of course.
And they kind
first
of had
verse.
Had a little kind. Yeah, right. We're in the first verse. Had a little romance kindled, but then she went off and married somebody else.
Yes, they broke up.
And he was dating Jenna Kramer.
Yes.
And you know, so now.
Yes.
Tell our listeners the rest of the story, as they say.
And I think it's interesting. He was dating Jenna Kramer. They broke up. She got married, so she's married. She just recently got married, literally,
right.
In May.
Right.
Now, his current CD is supposed to be about their breakup.
Okay.
Him and Jenna, right? Especially the song I'm Gone. Okay,
right.
Fine. So while he's gone, apparently his ex-girlfriend, Amber Cochran, was married already to another gentleman.
Right.
And they were apparently, supposedly happily married until Brantley Gilbert shows up on the scene again. And then all of a sudden, their marriage becomes rocky, and they file for a divorce. And she says that her husband was abusive towards her. And he said, oh, no. We're getting divorced because of your cheating ways.
Oh, no.
And go ahead.
Well, now, Brantley Gilbert has written, apparently, you were telling me, some songs that we've heard on country radio, like More Than Miles, and You Don't Know Her Like I Do.
Uh-huh.
These are about
Amber. Yes.
Get
yes.
Out.
Those are not on his current.
No, they're not on the. No, they're on the one that has made him all that money. From
yes,
playing
exactly.
On the radio.
Well, he says that, you know, they've
they've been together off and on for a long time.
Right.
They obviously had a very strong connection.
Right.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And so, but what I think is funny is that she, when she got divorced from her husband, 26 days later is when she announced her engagement to Brantley Gilbert.
Oh, my. Now, this is a song. If this were Taylor Swift, there'd have been a song written about this already. So also, Florida Georgia Line's Tyler Hubbard. I know young girls' hearts are breaking all over the world now because he got married as well.
Yes, he did.
Tyler is, you know, putting his Sundays on and, you know, all that kind of thing. He's going to be playing Flip Cup with a wife now.
Mm-hmm.
So he's married.
He is married. He's married to Haley Stummel. They got married July 1st. Now, this is romantic. That date was special to them because it was the 2-year anniversary of their first kiss.
Oh.
Isn't that sweet?
My goodness.
That sounds like a country lyric, don't you think?
That does sound like a country lyric. Of course, now here's a little something. Mr. and Mrs. Hubbard are headed to the Turks and Caicos Islands.
Isn't that nice?
For their honeymoon.
They are. Oh, wait, don't forget. Her golden retriever, Harley, wore a bow tie. He was the ring bearer.
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you what. We welcome your comments, your questions, your tweets. You can hit Nikki up at VOA_music.
Yes.
And you can also listen to her on Country Hits USA on VOAnews.com.
That's it for this edition of International Edition. You can get more news and information on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
2014 saw no significant improvements in North Korea's deplorable human rights situation. According to the latest State Department Human Rights Report, which was just released, North Korea continues to deny its people basic freedoms, such as the freedoms of speech, press, assembly, association, religion, movement, and workers' rights. Furthermore, reports continued of a vast network of political prison camps in which conditions were often harsh and life-threatening, and prisoners were subjected to forced labor, starvation, torture, rape, and forced abortions. Defectors continued to report extrajudicial killings, disappearances, arbitrary detention, arrests of political prisoners, and torture. The judiciary was not independent and did not provide fair trials. Reports continued of severe punishment of some repatriated refugees and their family members. There were also reports of female victims of trafficking among refugees and workers crossing the border into China. The people of North Korea, said U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, Tom Malinowski, should enjoy the same rights and freedoms as the people of South Korea and the people of every country in the world who are able to speak their minds and elect their leaders and to travel where they want, and not to be placed in labor camps because of something they've said or thought or because of who their relatives are. In recent years inside North Korea, there has been far greater awareness among the population of what their rights are and of how people outside of North Korea live. What has sustained this regime over many years, said Assistant Secretary Malinowski, has been its ability to deny people that knowledge. And its ability to do that has eroded considerably in the last few years. And we are doing everything we can to try to get knowledge and information to the people of North Korea so that this trend continues. Change takes time, said Assistant Secretary Malinowski. But when it comes, it often surprises us and goes very quickly. And I think that day will come when we see that happen in North Korea.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.